We're synced up and we're ready to go. Welcome back to the Silverstein Podcast. Exciting episode, exciting tune, big tune, big fucking tune.
Huge riff.
It is. And I have a question to pose right off the bat.
Oh my God.
Could this be the greatest Silverstein song ever written? Could it be?
Oh my God, these hyperboles.
Is that a bold statement?
Do we have to answer it, or is it for the listener to answer?
It's for everyone hearing this now, you guys. We've got four out of five of us. Billy is absent this time, but I'll pass it off to you, Mr. Kohler. Is this Ultraviolet the greatest Silverstein song ever written?
It's one of the greatest songs. No, I mean, it's huge. It's massive. It's the lead single of Misery Made Me. This was the big reveal, right? This is what we were counting down to. This is what we were anticipating. This is the smash hit, Ultraviolet.
I think somebody with one of those Nokia phones just whipped it out the window wearing their Discovering the Waterfront t-shirt, listening to you say that.
And Josh, do you remember where you were when you first heard the Ultraviolet demo and said, this is the best Silverstein song I've ever heard? Do you remember, Josh?
Yes, I was sitting in my basement. I did a lot of that last year and the year before that. It's pretty much all I did. But man, did I jump up off the couch with gusto when I heard that riff come crashing down. Holy.
That got your fucking ass up and you work. Or whatever Kim Kardashian said. That got it going. And lastly, Mr. Paul Mark, the co-writer of this epic jam. We're going to have Cody from Wage War. I forget his last name. It starts with a Q or something.
I know what it is. I can spell it, but I can't say it.
We can all spell it.
Yeah, it's Cody Q. It must be one of those things whenever you see, like, maybe you're bowling and it's like you see a name on the board beside you and it's like Cody Q and you're like, I wonder what his last name is. And you start to wonder. That's what I think of with Cody Q, who was the co-writer of the song. But to my question for you, is this song your favorite of the new songs? And what did you think of it when you were working on it with Cody?
Man, I don't, like, Cody can't currently hear us. So I'm gonna say I don't think it's actually my favorite. I can see why we think it's the best, but as with many things that are technically the best, my favorite lies somewhere in the weeds. And I like some of the weirder, less approachable stuff maybe. But, and so I was looking at my calendar because I want to know kind of the timeline of when this stuff was written. And this session we did like early November, and it was maybe the third session I did for the album. And if we look, you know, go back to previous episodes, I was like not mentally in a good place. But this was the session where it started feeling more comfortable. And I think that's largely in part to how comfortable Cody made me feel about like the ideas. And like, he just like, I could say minimal words and he would just like take it and run with it and fully understand like kind of the music behind whatever nonsense I was saying. So I felt like really good about the session and super strong about the song. And I mean, we'll get to that, but it's evidenced by the fact that this song did not really change after we did that demo. So that doesn't happen very much. As if you've been listening to this podcast, you hear stuff go from demo to final product. It changes quite a bit usually. And this one was maybe the least I've ever seen a song change.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, we do have a demo version of it to prove that fact. 100%. So you talk about November, you mean November of 2020. Definitely, now that we can look back at pandemic and stuff, that was a weird time because it was like, it was feeling pretty hopeless, right? That was like the numbers were on the rise. We'd already been in this thing for way longer than we thought we would. There was kind of no hope of getting out. And like, did you write the lyrics, Paul Mark, or did you and Cody tag team it? Because I got to say, the first time I heard the song and there was that pre-chorus line, is it chemical, supernatural? That was to me like, that sold me on the song. Like that lyric, I felt so compelling and so relatable to just about everything I was feeling at that time with my own, you know, mental health.
Yeah, man, I like that line a lot too. I honestly, we did it together. Like we had all the like top line going together in the session. So I don't know exactly whose that was, but I mean, I give Cody credit for it because I know how it started. Like where we found the point of it is like the classic. If you ever like write songs with people, you do that whole thing where it's like, let me look through my phone and see if I wrote anything cool down. And like when when it's album time for, I don't know if anyone else does this, when it's album time, I know it's coming, I just have a note in my phone that's like, at that time was called Silverstein LP10. And it was sort of just like a text mood board of like stuff I was feeling. Like if an idea popped in my head, I just write it down, like one word, couple lines, whatever. Even just like make a song that sounds like a fucking Honda Civic or something. It's like, and that will mean something to me in some way. I don't know. But Ultraviolet, just that, was written down in all caps, like near the top of that. So like when Cody was like, what are we writing about today? And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm like really drawn to this word today. And so like, yeah. I think he said, the first line of the, like, can't see it with my own eyes, can't feel the lows or the highs, was like, that really just unpacked it immediately. And I think from there we got the rest of it.
Yeah. You know, it's a funny thing about titles, how, you know, I remember I asked a Fat Mike on one of my podcast episodes. I said, so like, how do you write songs? So you're like, your songs are crazy. And he goes, honestly, I just start with a title every single time. And I like, kind of like, it's Fat Mike's. I thought he was just like kind of saying whatever, because I was like, I never start with a title. But since that, I've thought about it more and more. And like, the hardest thing to really do when you're writing a song, I think, is have a concrete, solid, relatable, meaningful idea that probably has a hook or a tagline in it that you can use. And I remember you telling me, Paul Mark, about Infinite and how that song was like, there, that word had to be there, and you were like, what word is it going to be? And then when you realized it was Infinite, it like, then the whole song wrote itself. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of what I remember you telling me.
For sure. I mean, like, I think this, like, I'm kind of, you know, I think everyone's always like trying to refine their process and like see what works best for them. But I'm finding, for me at least, having the end and then working to it, it is a lot more effective. And like, I can be more direct and focused with the rest of the material if I know where it's all going. Like, I don't meander to a point very well. Like, I think I need, because I never get there. I'll never arrive. So like, I think I need to know where I'm going and like build the universe out from that, rather than kind of just start writing and see where it takes me and hope that whatever is inside will like come out in a way that makes sense. If that
totally
makes any sense.
it does make sense to me, a lot of sense to me. And I find now, you know, the more songs that I write and listen to and analyze and everything, you can almost tell when somebody kind of started at the beginning of the song and wrote something like totally in a linear fashion, where like the first few lines don't really mean anything, or they don't really seem to line up with like what the whole chorus and second verse and maybe bridge is about. And it's like, you can tell someone was just like, all right, I have to start at the beginning, because that's where you start, you totally know? And then you end up like, you know, they write a really like catchy first line or something that has a real attention grabber. But then the song, the meaning meanders until that first line, even if it's like cool in terms of like words, the meaning of it is like completely wrong. And I find that happens all the time. I'm guilty of it, but definitely I hear it all the time, like in songs that I hear.
For sure. I mean, I think we're all guilty of it, because it is, there's something like, I think when you get something really cool, whether it, you know, if it just happened to be the first thing you came up with ends up being the first line of the song, like it almost sucks when you write something too cool as the first line. So you're like, well, I'm never going to get past that, but the song has to start with it. So I hope no one notices the song goes downhill from there.
100%. So Paul, you tend to be the guy in the band that when like the ideas come through the pipeline, we like to kind of direct it to you first. Like we feel like you're the big vision man. Like you see all the, like you're like the Bobby Fischer of emo, like seeing all the moves ahead or whatever, or Garry Kasparov. He's like a big deal right now, whoever it is. When you kind of heard this, did you see this song being like, okay, it's the lead single, and like this is kind of the song that's like going to kick off the campaign? Like, were you excited about it from that perspective? Like, in terms of you know, like, let's be honest, like this song is climbing the active rock charts right now. Like, this song is doing things our band has not done before. I don't know, I just would be interested in your take on like the commercial value of this song.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a direct song, and I think that speaks to the lyrics And even just the way it's constructed musically, how it's very, it grabs you off the top. I think it's, you know, it builds off of what we started with Infinite. So I think that's what's really interesting about it. Kind of like, I guess, exploring, you know, just like kind of like this more kind of like epic, more like wider sound. And I think what's cool about it too is like, correct me if I'm wrong, like, but there's like some guitar delay effects type stuff that like isn't maybe necessarily present on other songs that we've created over the last little bit. So it feels a bit more, I think it grabs back to a little bit of the past discography a little bit there too, but also pushing forward. But yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. And Paul Mark always invites me into his process, maybe even a little bit ahead of you, Shane, because, you know, it's like when there's lyrics on stuff or like vocal melodies being tossed around, you know, everyone wants to refine it to get to a point. It's like, actually, this is what I want to show you. It's not quite yet. Sure. But yeah, I think I remember even I think hearing it, it was just like maybe up to the first chorus, it was maybe the first version you sent. And it was almost like so like such a no-brainer. Like, yeah, this is an album song. Like, this felt like unlocking a bit of that next version of our band. Again, that I feel like Infinite kind of did with the last record and what we do a little bit on this record, but not entirely, right? Like, it's a very diverse record, which I'm glad. Like, I think we probably could have made a whole album worth of Ultraviolets, but it would have been a bit stale over time. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was really interesting. And I think I think even, you know, moving forward to in the studio, once we all brought it in, we are all working on it. Wasn't this one of those songs? It was a green light right off the bat. We're like, this is an awesome song, and it's definitely going to be on the album, right? I think we're
going back to our color-coded green, yellow, red highlighter that Billy was in charge of. And yeah, 100% this was a green song. I mean, I'm kind of amazed we didn't change it. Even like, I don't even remember in the studio having the conversation of like, because like, okay, like for people that don't understand, sorry, I'm my train of thought's a little all over the place. For people that don't understand, a lot of times songs will be a certain way. Then you'll just kind of tinker with it, change stuff like, oh, maybe this should be longer. And then you might even kind of settle on that for a little bit of time, like a couple of days or something. And then before you're like, actually, it was better the way it was. And then you kind of undo everything and things sometimes slowly in steps. And then you end up with like exactly what you wrote. I don't even remember this song doing that.
No, it was one of those things. I mean, also, before I get ahead of myself here, Sam and I have a somewhat antagonistic relationship. Sam, our producer in the studio, because we've worked together on so many projects outside of Silverstein as well, where I'm co-producing a record with him, so we get more even footing. He doesn't have all the power in that relationship like he does when we're making a Silverstein record.
Well, it's still your band, though. That's kind of the trump card right there.
Nah, I don't know. Like, we're paying him. Like, I know it's. I think it's a producer-artist relationship. It's very interesting to me, and there's a lot of trust, and you know, a lot can be said about it. But at the end of the day, Sam and I argue a lot, I guess is all I'm trying to say. And I think I give Sam a hard time for changing shit just to change it. And this might have been one of those times, depending on when we tracked it, I don't really remember, where it was like, Sam, you know nothing in this song needs to be changed. I'm not going to change something just because you want to change it. It's already like, because Sam likes to trim, right? Oh, the pre-chorus needs to be a little shorter. There is nowhere to trim this except in the bridge entrance, which we actually did, and that was literally it.
I've heard him say, he's like, if I don't make changes, I feel like I'm not doing my job. It's like, yeah, the less is more approach. If you don't do anything, you saw the vision of the song.
That's right.
Right, the producer's
job is to like hear a thing. I mean, Sam does a great job of this. I'm not shit talking to me at all. But like, what the whole point is to like hear something and decide if it's good or not good. And if it's not good, how do you make it better? You are allowed to hear something and think, no, that's just good already. Like, you can do it. It's rare.
I mean, it's all about maximizing the potential of the song, of the arrangement, totally, of the composition, of the vision, of the meaning of it, all those things. And it's like, no, it's not fucking easy. And we're going to have, like, if the six of us, the five of us plus Sam are in the room, there'll be six different opinions. And that's just the way it is. But I think with this song, it was probably the one of the few times making this record where it was like, pretty much we all knew that nothing had to change at all, and we were going to have a pretty damn strong song.
Yeah, and it was just even lyrically so straightforward. Like, it still obviously like exists as one sort of like universal metaphor, but it's it's so opaque, but it's cool because it's artistic in that way. It's like it is directly delivered, and so everyone could kind of appreciate that right away. Like, there wasn't a lot of bickering about like, well, what does that lyric mean? Can it be changed so that everyone understands it better? It's like it already was just so cut and dry as far as the like the message, and I think we had all kind of connected with that aspect of it, so it was easy to just move on from arrangement and like lyric and melodies. Again, simple and good, and like we knew you were going to kill them, it was a great range for you. So it's just like, how do we bring it to life with all the little, all of our own personal vibes and touches? But
the one part I remember kind of working on, kind of talking about, was the bridge section. Mm-hmm. Where we had, because we didn't have, and you, when we play the demo, you'll hear that the bridge is mostly empty. And your idea, Paul Mark, was like about shock therapy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the idea of that and that being something maybe people believed really worked, or some people still believe really works, or I don't know. Obviously, there's some mad science going on there. But I remember Googling how many volts is like shock therapy, and we got like an answer we didn't want.
Yeah, it was
we
like too low.
How much is 50,000?
Yeah. It was like, oh, they use 1,000 volts. It's like, that doesn't sound like nearly enough. We got to go way up.
No, it was like 60 volts. It was just like, it's like the amps were really high, and we're like, well, we're not going to say amps.
Yeah. It's like, we're writing a song, not a science textbook here. Like, we're going to take a professional creative liberty. I remember
exactly,
that. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, 50,000, that sounds like a lot of volts. Let's go with that. Sure.
That was another one of those moments, I think, like, Paul Martin, you like walk into the room where you're like, I found the idea, and then you guys started throwing the lyrics back and forth. It felt very collaborative, you know, like, again, everyone like knew it was the last piece of the puzzle for this song, and it was coming together, it seemed like, so easily when you were writing that bridge.
Well, one of my favorite things about it is the, like, just when I say, light me up, like, just how... I don't know. It's just like so emotional without it, with it being almost unemotional, and it brings so much like energy when that hits. Like, because every other band would scream it, you know, or like do some kind of Keith Buckley croony thing, hardcore thing, and like the fact it's just talked out is so, to me, was like, I thought that was like the coolest idea. Whoever's idea it was,
it's perfectly in line with the like. You know, you're the main character of the song, like the speaker, feels that sort of ambivalence, or like, it's not quite ambivalence, but this like resignation to like, I'm fucked, I can't change anything. Just like, if this is all we got left, like, do it. Cause like, I want to feel something. Like, and I think mm-hmm. that's the point of that bridge. And that's like the turn the song takes. But yeah, and I think that performance like perfectly served what I think you're supposed to feel when you listen to it.
Totally. I know Josh lyrically really cuts to the core of you. And I know you went through, you know, a hard 2020, as we all did. But I remember you kind of talking about how your own mental health and stuff, and this song kind of like really spoke to you.
It absolutely did. I mean, I feel like I've been suffering for a while now, pre-pandemic. The pandemic certainly didn't help. I know it's been hard for everybody, and it has definitely brought some kind of underlying things to the surface for a lot of people, and myself included. It puts you right there where I've been feeling, what I've been thinking and feeling and dealing with, just that kind of... powerlessness against some force that's you know, come down over you, and you are at its whim. And yeah, I definitely have moments where I feel like I would like to be shocked back to feeling anything else. And so it's amazing how sometimes these things come just at the right time. I definitely know a lot of our fans take a lot of solace in our music, and it's really cool when I'm able to as well. And certainly having the record to work on was the brightest spot in the last couple of years, so I appreciate it.
I feel like I was definitely hoping for the work of the record to be that shock, like that 50,000 volts that would hopefully take me out of it, and it, like, I really wanted it to be, but it just like took so much longer than that. Like, I really expected that once I started working on stuff with all you guys and, like, you know, putting my mind to good use and not just sitting around doing bullshit in my basement, that I would feel better. And it really didn't do it. Like, it took so long. And even now, I'm still not fully out of it, if I'm being perfectly honest. But it's definitely not as desperate as it used to be. But, you know, I make a song about it and it's like, you know, they say, oh, it's good therapy. Write it all down. Like, you're going to feel better. And it's like, no. Maybe not just always. Maybe worse, honestly. Yeah. I had to dwell on it more.
You know, I think you're never going to have something that fully flips a switch and makes you feel differently. It's these tiny little baby steps along a long journey. And I think as long as you keep on moving, that's kind of what takes you from where you are to where you want to be.
Absolutely. That's true. That's true, right? Sometimes it hurts real good at the beginning and then, you know, that's what you need to kind of eventually get over it. We've got a very special guest, Mr. Cody. Hey, Cody, how the fuck do you say your last name anyway, brother?
Quistad.
Quistad. Got it. There it is. I knew that.
I would have not said it like that. I think in my head I pronounce it Keystad.
It's a curse. It started somewhere over in Scandinavian countries. So it's kind of, I've gotten Keystad, Kistad. Basically anything other than Quistad is what it normally lands on, but oh well.
Have you ever thought about just going with like a real badass stage name?
Yeah, I mean, I might just chop the last name in general and just be Cody and see what happens, you know what I mean? No one else has that name for sure.
It's like funny when you're like young and you're like, yeah, I'm never gonna like be like in a band like that goes anywhere. Who cares about like what I call myself? And then you're like, you could be like, I don't know. What's a cool stage name for Cody? We got to make one up.
Code Red.
Code Red.
Cody Red.
We bought cowboy hats and somebody called me Cody Danger. So there's that.
Oh, that's cool.
Cody Danger. I like
that's
it.
That's pretty good.
It's got a ring to it.
Dude, Cody, thanks so much for hopping on with us. Talking about the smash hit Ultraviolet climbing up the active rock charts. Paul, what number are we at right now?
49, top 50.
Number nine on the active rock charts. There we go. Top 10. I love it.
That's huge.
Well, dude, it's huge. Well, yeah, I was kidding. We'll be at number nine soon. Trust me. We're actually going to. Have you heard of the song in a while? You want to listen to a demo?
I would love to.
Well, let's play this demo for the people. Get it fresh in our minds. This is the demo, Cody, that you recorded and Paul Mark is singing on. And we're going to play it right now for the people. Here it is. Ultraviolet 1.2. That's how little we changed this thing. Here it is. Ultraviolet.
Do you believe in things unseen?
I think we just turned the trap hats down a little bit.
Strange has a hold on me. Is it chemical? Supernatural?
Sounds pretty good to me, man.
As it unfolds, I'm learning I have no control. Can't see it with my own eyes. Can't feel the love on the highs. Doesn't stop when I try to fight it. I get lost in the ultraviolet.
Part of the sign that changed.
Yeah.
There it is, Ultraviolet, the demo. Yeah, there was a few differences in that thing, actually.
Really, really minimal.
Really minimal.
Nice demo, Cody. Sounds
I think
great.
I do remember. It does. I think I do remember fighting. I think for a full pre-chorus at the end, because that's my favorite part of the song, and I thought we should have that whole bit again. I think I remember fighting for that, but regardless, Cody, dude. So let's talk about where you were at when you were coming up with these dope riffs and everything. And the one thing that jumps out at me too is this chord progression is not like very standard. Like the chord that starts the chorus is like kind of unexpected.
Yeah. So Paul and I got connected via Emmy from BMG. And wasn't it like kind of the beginning of COVID-ish?
Yeah, man, it was December 1st. So it was not the beginning of COVID, but it was, you were the third person I had spoken to like about music since yeah. COVID. Like,
yeah, I think it was one of like the first, because we did it via Zoom. So, I mean, I was just at my house in Spring Hill, Tennessee, which is a little house or a little south of Nashville. And we just kind of sat on Zoom and riffed this thing out. And, yeah, man, it's crazy listening back to that. Kind of the whole story in general, like, I remember we wrote that and I don't think I had heard anything back for a while. And then Emmy hit me back and was just like, hey, I think Silverstein is going to use Ultraviolet. I was like, no way. Like, that's so sick. And then it like dropped the other day and I was like, dude, this is so sick. So it was, I don't know. Super, super cool, man.
Dude, I should have texted you. Sorry. I should have been like, just, okay. You know, it's going to be a single. We made a video.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was funner that way. Cause I was like seeing posts on like Twitter or whatever about like new Silverstein. I was like, no way. Like, I'm going to go check it out. I was like, it's Ultraviolet. And then I got to see the video and stuff. So I got the full experience to see everything all in one package, and I'm happy that I did, because it turned out incredible. You guys absolutely smashed it.
I want to ask a guitar question, because I can't believe I didn't think to ask it in the moment. Okay, so this song is in the tuning we call Bad Gabe. I mean, it's a half step flat of that, but whatever. I mean, it's kind of an unorthodox tuning. You had already written that main riff maybe in advance of the session, or if you just pulled that out of your ass as soon as we started Zoom, that's crazy. But is that a tuning you work in often, or did you know that we used it, or like, what's the deal there?
No. So, we use like a version of that tuning. There's a couple different bands that, have used it. I think Nothing More uses it. I've heard Tool uses it. I think, Architects uses a version of it. And for us in my band, like, you know, I mean, even to this day, like, the name of the game for us was do as many different tunings as you can with one guitar. So we would just keep the guitar in like one tuning, which for us like is A sharp. And then we would just take the top string and just kind of tune it all over the place. So, for this song, I think we started off and we were just like, I think we had talked and I was like, what are you guys normally playing? You're like, well, we're normally, in this tuning, whatever. And when I think you offered that up as an option and I was like, oh, well, let's do that.
Huh. I don't remember doing that, but that's all right. Well, I'll take some of the mystery out of it, but that it does make sense that we spoke in advance.
Maybe we did. I don't know. That was a long time ago, but I feel like for me, at least when it comes to riff writing and creativity, like it doesn't box you in because you don't immediately go to like the things that you would normally do. Like if you're playing in just like a regular, like drop D, or a tuning that's like a drop D tuning, like you have your standard things. It's like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, open 8-5, you know what I mean? So to be in a tuning like that, where you have like different, I don't know, you just have different like note selections and maybe do things that you wouldn't normally do. Which 100%. I think kind of comes through in that main riff a little bit. Cause it's pretty noodly.
Yeah. Well, it offers you this opportunity. The thing that's really cool, just to get a bit nerdy about Bad Gabe, as we call it, or whatever, a tuning like that with a really big interval between your two lowest strings, is it allows for this like super heavy, low kind of like bass part of the riff with really noodly bits without moving your hand too much. Like to play that riff in a tuning, a more standard tuning, is like you would never write it because it's like almost an impossible interval to stretch. And I know because
you would literally be going like this.
Yeah, so it's neat what it brings into play.
100%.
Sorry, non-guitar people.
Yeah, for sure. As far as the starting out of the chorus, it definitely is a different chord because normally you would start on the theoretically the one or whatever.
Yeah.
But it feels really good though. Like there's almost like it makes the back half of the chorus, like if the chorus is like A, B, it makes the B feel so good to me.
It's true. Like from a theory point of view, I've never bothered sitting down and like figuring out exactly what's going on, but it feels almost like a key change. Like, I don't know if it is at all, but it's really, really interesting how it has that shift, but then it resolves right to the riff again. It's like, it is really kind of magical. And I think that makes the song have this like really just like you kind of turn your head for a second and you go, oh, okay, like there's a really refreshing bit to it that like sometimes in, I don't know, whatever the style of music this is, things that are just constantly on the one, it's just like, oh, here we go again, and it's like you don't get like emotion out of it, right?
It's the four, right? I think it's like it's the pre-chorus note, right? Like what you would normally do in a pre-chorus, is it not? It's basically the riff progression effectively played in reverse.
Oh, okay.
Exactly, but it is. I don't know. I think it's the fourth. Like if the low, if it's A, like it's a D that it starts on. No, I don't know. This is boring podcast chat.
I don't know. I don't find it boring at all, man. I know not everybody here understands musical theory or cares to, but it is interesting how a certain song that uses this stuff can just be different from another song and be a great song on account of it. Right.
Yeah.
Paul Mark's got 100%. A guitar and he's figuring it out right now.
I think it's the five.
Him. Well, the one is open. Call it
right.
A B, C,
D,
D sharp.
D sharp.
So that's the two, that's the three, that's the four. It's the four.
It's the four.
Yeah.
All right. From now on, if you want good songs, we're starting on four.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, the hook is also interesting too, because it's like it's on the, I don't know, it's like it's just one semitone up or whatever from the root when it's like, I get lost in the ultraviolet. And it's like that by itself, just like it's pretty much one note. You wouldn't think is like, oh, that's like the hook of the century, but that in conjunction with the music really does work too, and obviously the meaning of the lyrics and everything, which I want to get to next, but that's like also pretty interesting too.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just listening to like, you know, a lot of like top 40 music these days, like you don't have to go insane to get something, like you don't have to be like doing crazy runs and stuff to be getting something that people are going to remember and something that's catchy and hooky. And I think that this song is a perfect example of that. You know, nothing has to go too all over the place. You don't have to be jumping octaves or whatever. It's just, it's very memorable. So yeah, I agree.
We have a word for it. We have a word for it in Camp Silverstein, Cody. We call it bonehead.
Bonehead.
Yes. Yeah. Anything that's like just it. Like so stupid and easy and just like, we just call it bonehead, and sometimes it's just the best. It's the move every time. So lyrically, I know obviously you and Paul Mark like banged your heads together over Zoom at a really time in the world that was really, can I say, fucked up and scary, and you know, no one really knew what was going on. Especially you talk about a time like December 2020 when we'd already been in this for a while, and then the cases were rising, and everything was super weird. We talked earlier about some of the lyrics, like for me, I think the line I heard first, is it chemical, supernatural, like that really resonated with me from, you know, my own mental health journey and just everything I was going through. Can you talk a little bit about like where you were kind of pulling inspiration from, Cody?
Yeah. I remember that Paul came in with the title like immediately, like he had like the entire concept set up. He was like, I had this idea for, you know, Ultraviolet. And then I remember, you know, we kind of like looked it up and were looking at, what it means and like kind of what it is. And so kind of relating that as it is to, you know, mental health. And I mean, you hit the nail on the head, just like, what a weird time December 2020 was, you know what I mean? Like we were, you had the whole, you know, all right, everyone stay indoors for, you know, 14 days and we're going to flatten the curve. And then, you know what I mean? That didn't happen. So, you know, you're at this place where you're, you know, there's no real end in sight. So it's kind of like you just get lost in this, you know, thing that like you can't see it, but you feel it. So for me, I think at least where I was pulling inspiration from on my end is kind of just based around, you know, the feelings of the pandemic or just that, that time in life in general, not even necessarily COVID related, but you know, it's just a weird time for all of us as musicians and creatives and then just kind of the world in general.
Awesome. Cody Danger. You got anything to add? I mean, we really appreciate you coming on and telling the story of the song and getting a little nerdy with us. Anything else you remember or would be cool to tell the people?
I mean, I just want to say thank you guys for, first of all, you know, bringing the song to life and making it super, super sick. Like I said, the first time I heard it, I was just like jamming. Cause the last thing that I had heard was what we listened to in the beginning, but without vocals. So, it was just the instrumental that I sent over. So to hear it all and to see it all in the same thing was super special for me. So yeah, I just want to say thank you to all of you guys for, letting me play a small part in that. And, yeah, I had a blast doing it and, yeah, it's,
what did you think of my dance moves in the video?
Dude, it was so incredible. Who did that video?
Wyatt Clough, at Wafka. He's
oh, Wafka. All
of our videos for the last little while. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, Wafka. Yeah.
Yeah. We met him on, the Beartooth run, which you guys about to embark on.
Any tips for us on the Beartooth tour? Do we have to kick someone's ass on the first day or?
Well, I know you guys have never toured with Beartooth before, so let me give you the rundown of each member. I mean, my only tip would be to come studied up on your I Think You Should Leave episodes off Netflix.
Oh, we're there. We're good.
Oh, yeah, we're there. 100%.
All right, cool. We had an endless joke line of I Think You Should Leave the entire tour. Like, you only communicated via I Think You Should Leave lines.
A joke hole just for farts? Yes, we could do it too, man. Well, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by, Cody, and best of luck on the Slipknot tour you're on right now. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it is insane.
Awesome.
Absolutely, man. Insane.
Enjoy it.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. See you, boys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, dog. Man.
Cheers. And there he is. Cody, what was it again? I already forgot his last name.
Quistad.
No.
Quistad.
Quistad. Quistad. I already messed it up.
No, hell of a guy, hell of a musician. What a band, too. Really cool that he had that insight that was pretty much what you said, Paul Mark. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of times with songs, they make so many changes and there's so much like there's a big journey. This song was just like, would you say a banger right out of the oven? It
yeah.
truly was.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Sometimes it takes a really long time to start seeing eye to eye with, you know, with the people you're working with. But those rare times where it's just right away, all the parties understand and are on the same page. It can go like really fast. which is great. And sometimes it goes so fast you second guess it. You're like, oh, is this not good? Because it was too easy. Right. But yeah, I think, you know, Cody is just a really open-minded guy with a lot of great ideas.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's been plenty of songs in history, and I'm not going to compare Ultraviolet to these songs, but I'm going to. Paranoid by Black Sabbath. They literally wrote that song in the studio like at the last minute because the record company wanted like a really short radio song, so they just wrote that in like an hour. Today by the Smashing Pumpkins, same thing. Billy Corgan wrote that song in 5 minutes. So like there are extremely huge popular songs that were written like just, hey, here it is. And sometimes there's a reason, you know?
Yeah, as I appreciate you comparing it, Ultraviolet specifically to those two songs, and it is as good as both of those. You are right, and maybe better.
Maybe better.
You heard it maybe here first. Better.
Well, we got to talk about the video. We made a video, all right. This was a little different. I don't think I should speak to the inspiration as much because it wasn't as much really something I was familiar with. I just did learn the choreography and tried to give it my best shot. So someone kick it off with kind of where this idea for the video stemmed from.
I'll just preface this story and just say that, you know, I think in working with Wyatt more and more, especially on this campaign from the album cover to this being the lead video, I think we get more and more open-minded, as he very much is, to want to try different stuff. And we put a lot of trust and faith in him. But Paul, Mark, you and Wyatt had some sidebars on the last tour talking about this because, you know, the video is very direct, or the song is very direct. And we didn't want a video that was so on the nose, but you took some interesting inspiration to get to where Shane had to learn how to dance.
Definitely putting the bar in sidebars, I think.
I mean, look, every time Wyatt and I sit down, it eventually or inevitably will like just cascade into us trying to find a way to get Shane to dance on camera. And we've been trying to get Shane.
No, it's all I'm just a joke to you.
Yeah, we've been trying to make this happen for a long time. No, that's not exactly true. Though I have wanted to do a full band choreographed like 1990s boy band type choreography video for a long time. This is obviously not that. I think just by virtue of Wyatt and I living somewhat close to each other, we just have a lot of beers and talk a lot of bullshit. And something at the time that Wyatt was tasked with coming up with the treatment for this video was I was obsessed with this song by this Italian artist called Adriano Celentano. And the song, I just had to look the title up because it's really fucking hard to say. It's called Prison Colonin Sinancusol. All one word, and it's not actually a word.
Was there a quiz stat in there?
There's a few quiz stats in there. I think quiz stat, quiz stat. But anyway, it's a really interesting song that we don't really need to get into, but I recommend listening to and looking up on Wikipedia. But the video is like this really cool kind of mod, some like dance meets like cult 60s church TV show kind of vibe. But I was just obsessed with the fucking song and I was watching the video all the time and it just felt, I knew why it would love it because it's weird. And so he found a great way of making something that's just stupid and weird into something that's Silverstein and weird. And when I say stupid in this case, I mean stupid for us to do would be to rip off this video note for note because it's obviously not us. But yeah, I don't know. Do you guys like it? I thought you did an amazing job with the dancing. It's one of my favorite videos, if not my favorite we've ever made.
Well, we don't have video, unfortunately, for this podcast. Maybe I can upload somewhere. The choreographer sent me... Okay. We went to a little rehearsal studio. Like a film studio to do some photos. And we met up with the director, Wyatt, and the choreographer. And he sort of showed me all these like kind of fucked up dance moves he wanted me to do. And so I tried them and I learned them and I practiced at home. And then he sent me like videos of himself doing them. And the videos he sent me are so funny. I would love to upload them somewhere for people to see. But no, I have like literally zero dance skills, training, anything. Like I know how to like run around on stage just like amped up on energy, I guess, and like maybe not look like a complete idiot doing that. I don't know, maybe an idiot doing that, but this kind of thing, way out of my wheelhouse. So I wanted to put in the work to not make it bad, but also like videos are weird because you do something and you can't really see yourself doing it and you don't really know always like what lens they're using, like how close up is this? Are they getting like my whole body? Are they just like, are they zoomed in on my fucking crotch at this point? Like, I don't know what's going on. So it can be really, it's really uncomfortable, especially there's a whole, we had a huge film crew for this. So they're all like watching me and like, I'm like, are people making fun of me? Like, am I just a like hopeless dancer? But in the end, like, even if I'm just a meme, that's cool with me.
Well, something I thought that really unlocked your aesthetic for this video and why it was like, I don't want you to have a microphone. And I can't think of really many other videos of ours where you're at least not holding a microphone because it's natural. It shows, you know, what you do. But it frees both of your hands and then it unlocks this ability for new movements. And I thought you did a great job of like, it's not even just like dancing. It's channeling this like weird preacher energy, you know, like you're maybe leading a cult, but maybe you're an okay person. Like, what is happening in this rundown church, which it really was. The set was like an unused church that I don't think they've done anything there in 10 plus years.
Yeah, God has left the building. There's no God left in that church.
No God and no heat left in that church. That's why on video where you see Shane's breath, that is not special effects. That's negative 10 degrees Celsius right there coming at you. But yeah, there was, I think all of that really unlocks something. I mean, even for me, like one of my favorite parts of the video, aside from Josh turning the dial, which I think is the best part of the video, we all can agree on that. But really, the moment when you finally reveal the band on stage and it kind of zooms out, it's like, it's so just like, it's kind of haunting at this point because like Shane's kind of gotten you all possessed and stuff, and now we're all like part of the cult and let's go for it. You know, it's a really interesting video, and I think Wyatt did such a great job on it.
Dude, we should explain that part of the video in case someone was wondering why we were being indoctrinated and then doing the indoctrination. I guess now that I say it like that, it should be obvious, but Shane is possessed by the ultraviolet, right? That's kind of the whole thing. That's why he's dancing around on stage and those sultry moves he's doing. And us, the band, again, this is the reader, the explainer for the video. So us, the band, are sitting in the chairs being brainwashed by the ultraviolet via Shane. So Shane is the conduit for this force that you cannot see. Shane is the physical representation of that, brainwashing us, the band. By the end of the video, we're hook, line, and sinker, baby. We're in there, and now we have to spread the good word to three people. I don't know why we didn't get four people to sit in the chairs. Wyatt said it looked better with three. I think it's because we couldn't find a fourth person who wanted to sit in the chair, or a fourth person who was wearing like wardrobe that made sense with the video. That was as good as we could do. We got three and some women, which is nice for representation's sake. We want to brainwash everybody.
And maybe then, you know, if there was continuation, then there would be what, eight people on stage. I don't know what instruments they would be playing next, but tambourine, something interesting, all of them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We should have got Sam in there. Damn it.
Somebody actually asked me if the colors of the chair were a throwback to the Smile in Your Sleep Clue video. They were.
They were. They are 100%.
Were they actually, though? Was that talked about?
We're going to tell them that, yeah, we were that smart, of course. Wyatt, somebody asked Wyatt, and Wyatt, I think, just told them, oh, yeah, it's totally.
Maybe
that's
it was.
Why.
Like, Wyatt's a weird dude. You never know. You never know with that guy.
You never know what he's thinking.
You never know what he's thinking at all. Josh, you haven't said much in the last little while. And you being like the video guy of the band, I want to know, you know, your thoughts on the video and everything except it being fucking cold.
It was certainly fucking cold. But I found the whole thing thrilling. You know, we've done so many videos in our career, so many music videos. And some of them focus on just, you know, a band in a room rocking out. And how many times can you do that? And I know Paul Mark is often of the mindset, like, we can't do another performance video. There can be an element of performance, sure, but the less of that, the better. And I think this is an example where we tried to run with that idea first and foremost and really made the most of it.
Yeah.
I know that you were, Shane, very apprehensive about having to do the dance stuff. And I think it came out so, so, so very well. It's very entertaining. It suits the mood and the whole vibe so very well. I'm thrilled by how the whole thing came out. I think it's very, you know, eye catching. And I gotta say, I think my favorite thing, you were mentioning the choreography. while you were, you know, performing your dance moves, the choreographer was standing behind the camera shouting dance moves at you, like,
yeah,
give me this one now, give me that one. And they all had wonderful moves, wonderful names of these moves.
Grinch walk.
I think there was the broke leg Elvis, the Grinch walk, like the Grinch who stole Christmas, like that little tiptoey little sneaky. And I think there might have been one actually called like super sneaky, where like you almost like Batmaned your arm over your face with your long coat. I thought that was maybe my very favorite part about making the video. Certainly making the video was challenging in those cold conditions.
Well, I'll have to ask Nick, the choreographer, if he minds if we upload his personal videos to me, my training videos, to see this.
We should have had Nick on the show.
Really funny. We should have had him.
He's such a good guy.
He is. He's one of the best. Yeah, and it was funny too when you mentioned him yelling, because like, you know, there's loud ass music because I have to hear the music, so I'm singing along with it and like everything's synced up. So I couldn't hear him, like, whatever he was yelling, but he was so emphatic. He was so into it. And like, we would cut, they would cut, and like, he would cheer and everyone's cheering. And I'm like, I don't know. Fuck. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But yeah, if it wasn't minus 10, it would have been maybe a good experience.
Fuck. He yelled so much stuff that I'm like biting my lip, trying not to laugh through all of it. Cause I'm like, I don't know if I'm on camera at this moment. And it's right. So Josh, do you remember he specifically yelled one thing that made us all laugh so much? Like, it was something like, it was like, get out of here with your sneaky self or something like that. But it was like way more intense than that. It was like way, it had more dance move. Oh man, Bill would probably remember. It's too bad Bill's not here, because God, I would like, I laughed so much.
I loved it too, because Wyatt, you know, he's a director and he's like pretty, he's very serious about what he's doing, but he's not the most like vocal, like aggressive person when you're recording. He's not like shouting at you to do things like some video directors we've had, and Nick totally is. So it was like, it was almost like Nick was the director through all that. Like it was really kind of funny. I don't know. I like the dynamic.
I think Nick was like watching the monitor even above you, because he wanted to see it, like the frame, the shot, how you looked there. And it was running up to you in between takes, and I had to run back to the back of the room and be like, all right, go do it again. Like, yeah, he was super energetic. And yeah, the whole crew, I mean, yeah, it's like working with Wyatt and his whole team, like they really put together some great people, and we're really fortunate to be able to have that.
Film is crazy. Like, we have by far the easiest like creative discipline. It requires almost zero coordination between any of us. Like, it's, we only need to be in sync with each other for about 3 minutes at a time. It's like you can mess it up pretty bad and no one will ever really know. In film, like just shooting, I mean, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but shooting a couple more music videos recently, like seeing the how coordinated 10 to 20 people need to be at all times, like utilizing very complicated equipment in places that equipment was probably not designed to go, like dealing with, you know, quote talent, like that, you know, just how they refer to us, which is always funny to me. God, that looks so much harder. Like, it always makes you think you guys are experts and I am a clown that doesn't know anything.
I know.
That's why on a video shoot, it's like so, you almost feel more relaxed. You're just like, look how busy they are. Like, I don't have to worry about all that.
I think it was during the video we did for Dialone, and they moved like a light or something. And there was like a stray cable that no one was going to walk near. And there's like three people like taping this cable down like perfectly, so like no one trips on it. And I'm thinking like, there's no fucking way we would ever do that. It's like, oh, there's like I just think of our practice space where we have XLR cables just like going everywhere. It's like a total mess. Like, who gives a shit? It's like because they have all the safety things they have to worry about too, where we're like, whatever.
Yeah.
So we should hire film crew and not music crew for the next tour.
Totally.
Yeah, and they're not drunk. No, you're right. Music, we're a bunch of fucking idiots, and that's the damn truth.
And that's Ultraviolet. There, go stream it now.
Yes, that is Ultraviolet. Great episode today, and thank you everybody for tuning in. We are going to be continuing this all the way through the rest of the album, Misery. made me, talking about every single track in depth and more. Make sure if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to hear from us, you can get in touch with us, any social media, whatever, we'll figure something out. And we'd love to hear from you, and maybe we'll have an episode where we answer some questions or put some new stuff in this. We don't know, but we're going to be doing so many more episodes. Before we go, we're going to do a thing we've been doing, which we all enjoy, and it's a little bit different. We're going to play the a cappella version of Ultraviolet. This means no music, just vocals, all the weird effects and all the stuff that is there you kind of hear. We're going to listen to it right now. Here it is. A cappella Ultraviolet.
Do you believe in things unseen? 'Cause something strange has a hold on me. Is it chemical? Supernatural? As it all unfolds, I'm learning I have no control. Can't see it with my own eyes. Can't feel the lows or the highs. Doesn't stop when I try to fight it. I get lost in the ultraviolet. Can I rewire my head when all the connections are dead? Doesn't stop when I try to fight it. I get lost in the ultraviolet. Losing my grip and I can't explain. I feel the fire but see no flames. Is it chemical? Supernatural? Why won't it let me go? I'm learning I have no control. Can't see it with my own eyes. Can't feel the lows or the highs. Doesn't stop when I try to fight it. I get lost in the ultraviolet. Can I rewire my head when all the connections are dead? Doesn't stop when I try to fight it. I get lost in the ultraviolet. If the current's the cure,
light me up.
50,000 volts! Yeah! Reborn! Electricity! Sell my soul!
Sell my soul!
For dopamine! Try to fight it. I get lost in the ultraviolet. Can I rewire my head when all the connections are dead? Doesn't stop when I try to fight it. I get lost in the ultraviolet. Ultraviolet!
There it is.
Always a treat.
It is. And like, I know you guys enjoy it too. It's not like a weird thing I do because I want to hear myself. It's just so interesting to hear that stuff that you just kind of hear and you don't really know is there. So that's all Sam doing that crazy, crazy mixing.
I find it very practical and helpful, going into rehearsals for a tour. It's like, what's that fucking harmony? Like I got some of that, right? But the chorus harmony actually changes in the second chorus, and in the third chorus, both are there and it's kind of dissonant. It's weird.
It is. And on the record, it sounds great. Yeah. I was surprised. It's very 50 in that one I found.
The bottoms are, yeah. No.
Yeah.
I know Sam and I hear lower harmonies differently. Like, he likes to hear the major-y ones, or I like the major. I can't remember. I'd have to argue with him again to find out.
But we
naturally hear different ones.
We're going to bring him when we get the song that has the most amount of backup vocals and harmonies and stuff. We'll get him on. We'll bring him on, but just for that part, just so you guys can argue about it. We'll pick the song on the record that makes sense to do that, and then you guys can have it out.
That would be great. I love to argue with Sam.
There you go. Next week, we will be back with Die Alone. That is the next episode. Bit of a crazy song. Special guest Andrew Neufeld of Comeback Kid will also be here. So you never know who's going to pop up on the Silverstein podcast. Very interesting. Very exciting. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Do you believe in things unseen? 'Cause something strange has a hold on me.